So thank you for the invitation. It's a pleasure to be here. The last time I came here was 6 years ago, and even the building looked different, so it's fun. I also realize I'm the penultimate speaker, and the last speaker is one of the organizers, so I think it falls upon me, even though Terry might disagree. I think it was a fantastic conference, and the organizers need to be thanked, so maybe we can all give them a hand. Okay, so actually that was my original talk, but I changed original title, but I decided to change my title for two reasons. So that's my title. No, and indeed, I didn't steal from the conference website. There's indeed a difference, and there's a second reason I changed my title, and the second reason is that one of the organizers, and you can guess who it is. I'll give you a hint if you want. Was complaining that the talks have been fantastic, but the slides have been so boring. Right, so we need more exciting slides. You can guess which organizer it is. My hint was, okay. Okay, so therefore, that's my second reason. And so let's take an example to see why. So this is the audience consists of a lot of mathematicians, and I've learned over these last few years that one has to be really careful about what you say, what you write, so commas can be very important. So that's an example. We are looking to invite interesting participants for the Moonshine Conference, and that is that. Versus that. Okay. all right. There's a more fun slide. If you want to look it up, just Google Oxford, JFK, and Stalin. Okay. So let me move on. So my talk will be based on these three papers. This thing disappears. What? There's something funny with this. Okay. Maybe I have to use this after all. It's two papers with Jeff Harvey, who's in the audience, and one with Janir Nazaroglu, who's a student of Jeff's. Really the talk is based on a lot of work by many people, many of whom are here. If you recognize your work, you should be. That's the intention. I don't make many references except the ones I need. But I think in the papers we've been careful. If you think not, please let me know. Okay, so let me begin with the fact that the original Matthew Moonshine observation by Eguchi, Oguri, and Tachikawa about 5 years ago still really remains a mystery. Okay, so we heard in the colloquium that the physics version of the monster moonshine was the first paper ever to be put up on the archive. So if you open that, you'll see a presentation, which is often done in many places, of the monster moonshine. You just begin with the J function. So here's a function, everybody knows what it is, and the interesting observation is about its Fourier coefficients. So we can take the same attitude. You say, here's a function, h2. Everybody, at least in this room, knows what the function is. And the interesting observation is about its Fourier coefficients, that these are representations of the dimensions of the representations of the Mathieu group. Okay, I'll give a definition of the function as well. Since the original observation, much has been done in many directions. You know, these twisted characters of this type have been found. There's been this beautiful umbral structure, which of generalizes this, and in fact, since then there have been newer moonshines, which we heard about in this conference. So many things have been done, but I think it's fair to say that we all are still really looking to understand kind of the solution to the original problem, and we think that the solution will be of this type. Right? That there's some module, which is an infinite dimensional, it's a direct sum of vector spaces. Labeled by an integer, such that the dimension of V of n is precisely equal to this A of n. Okay, and this module has a natural M24 action. consistent with all the observations, and Terry has even proved that such a module must exist, consistent with all the observations made about this object. Okay. Now in physics, we think of n often as being the eigenvalue of some operator, let's say the Hamiltonian, and we think of this module. I mean, at least I tend to think of this module as, roughly speaking, some conformed field theory. Maybe there's a string theory construction, something on a torus because there's a modular parameter. The idea is that this function should appear as some observable in the physical theory. So something like this is the partition function, but maybe it's not as simple, maybe it's something else, but that's the intuition. And the question then is, what is this, what is the theory and what is the observable? So a good place to start looking for this theory, a good lamppost under which to look under, is the K3 elliptic genus, because that's where the whole thing started, right? And so we've had two definitions already, so I'll be quick. So I'll stick to the definition that Greg wrote out on the blackboard this morning. So M here is an n equal to 2,2 superconformed field theory, and the elliptic genus is defined as follows. You look at the, well, you can just think of this as the supersymmetric partition function on a torus, twisted by the R charge, by the R current. Right? So there's a chemical potential Z which couples to the R charge. L0 is the Hamiltonian. Equivalently, you can think of this as a trace in the Ramon-Ramon sector of the Hilbert space, minus 1 to the F, Q to the L0, zeta to the J0. Okay? And as Katrin explained a couple of days ago, there is a geometric definition when M, let's say, is a Calabi-Yau manifold. And indeed, when you have in the moduli space of this manifold some point where we have an explicit description as a superconformed field theory, these two definitions agree, these two notions agree. Okay? Good. So for K3, one can actually compute this in various ways. So this was done by Anne and her collaborators in the 80s. By looking at the T4 mod Z2 orbifold point, and here's the answer. It's 8 times a sum of ratios of squares of theta functions. These theta functions are the classical Weitov Jacobi theta functions. Okay, so there's a context to my talk, which is essentially Jacobi forms, and much of this has actually, all of this has already been said. Oh, I just realized that part of this is hidden from that side, but okay. Here are some basic definitions. Maybe I'll put it down. Is that better? In case you're wondering what. I think most people know all these definitions. I hadn't realized there'll be this problem, but I think it's okay. So essentially, I'm going to use this notion of a Jacobi form of weight K index M. Just means that there's a modular transformation which is controlled by K, and an elliptic transformation which is controlled by M. That more or less defines what a Jacobi form is. You also have to give growth conditions. So it's this object is holomorphic in tau and Z. You have to give growth conditions. And the one we will choose is, in fact, exactly the one Greg chose, which is called weak Jacobi form. It says that in this sum, n is at least 0. Okay? This elliptic property implies that there is the so-called theta function decomposition, that phi can be written as a sum of the standard canonical theta functions, which I think everybody knows, times functions called HL. And if phi is Jacobi, it satisfies a modular property, then that's equivalent to the fact that these functions HL are a vector-valued modular form. Okay, so these are very basic notions. There are these examples that actually Albrecht already wrote down on the board. So there's a theorem that the ring of weak Jacobi forms is completely generated by just three basis elements called A, B, and C. And I've written them out explicitly. So these A, B, and C generate the ring of weak Jacobi forms over the ring of modular forms. So what that means is that any weak Jacobi form of any index and any weight can be written as sums of monomials of these three Jacobi forms, canonical Jacobi forms, times E4 and E6 to raise to some power, with coefficients in being a number. Okay, And one thing I would like to stress here is that so here I've written the weight and index, and A, I just write down the behavior of these, the analytic behavior of these functions as z goes to zero. A has a double pole, B goes to a constant, 12, and C has a single, A has a double zero, excuse me, B goes to a constant, and C has a single zero. Okay, so that's just to give some notations. So this elliptic genus now is just two times phi 0 1 or b in that notation. Okay. All right. So I said this is a good starting point to look for moonshine, and the reason is that's how it was done, as Hiroshi told us yesterday. So what you do is you decompose this elliptic genus in characters of the n equal to 4 representations. So I won't write this down. This has been already written down many times, at least a couple of times. So you do this decomposition. You write this function as a linear combination of these characters. And then that's your definition of the coefficients an. So that's your formula, right? So you then pull down these coefficients, and you make this generating function for an. So that's how that's essentially how Eguchi, Oguri, and Tachikawa did this. The Mathieu moonshine and all the new moonshines that we've seen, as many speakers talked about in the last 4 days, there are many structurally new things compared to the old Mathieu monster moonshine. So in terms of group theory, so in many different ways, and we've learned about it in the last 4 days. But one thing that's not been focused a lot at this conference are the modular properties of H2. And one thing which is clear is that, the modular property, we know what the modular property is, that this object, this function H2, is a Mach modular form. Okay, so I'll tell you what that means in a second. But already you can see that the fact that the elliptic genus has modular properties, and it must have modular properties by definition. If you take that and then you decompose this, and you just throw away a certain piece and say just keep the rest of the pieces. In physics, when you have some spectrum and you throw away part of the spectrum, typically you break the symmetries of the theory. And indeed here you break the modular symmetry. However, you break it in this case in a very nice way. You still have something called the Mach modular symmetry, which remains. And of course, the puzzle is perhaps you even gain some symmetries which were not there in the original K3, namely the moonshine symmetries, right? So if you look at the K3 elliptic genus, these are the numbers which are really associated to K3. These are the geometric invariants of K3. Okay, but these numbers are perfectly sober. I don't know if there's a mathematical definition, but I mean that there's no moonshine associated with this. Perfectly, right? But out of that, you pull out these things, and that's the object which has moonshine.
You don't have to go to the Mach theta function way of writing it back. You could define it on the actual Fourier coefficient.
Fourier coefficient of H2.
No, Fourier coefficient of the full elliptic genus.
Right. Yeah, but in this way.
No, you don't have to write it that way, right? I mean, it's a choice to write it that way.
Sure, but you can extract it by saying, this is equal to the sum of two numbers.
Yeah.
I'm just saying that these numbers by themselves, which are invariant over modular space, don't show any moonshine properties. You have to decompose this, that's all I'm saying.
I mean, they show as much moonshine properties as all the other numbers.
Well, so I would say.
I mean, you have to look at them right, but.
So the point is here, you don't have to look at them right, you just have to look at them.
starting from Q26 onwards, you also have to look at them right.
Of course.
I mean, it's just the low level phenomena that you can guess it more easily.
Sure, so yes, there's that. Right, and, okay, well, so then.
There isn't really a difference.
Well, I'm not sure. There's also an issue that about virtual representations. Okay, so you might say this is a point of view, but suppose you don't want virtual representation, and for some reason you don't, you say the minus one, you allow for the minus one, only for the minus one, then you have this issue of this 20. So maybe this is a point of view, point taken. Okay. Yeah. Okay. But what I would like to do is, so indeed, maybe that's why there hasn't been much attention on this. But maybe this is important, and the point of view I'm going to take is that the fact that the real generating function of the numbers we're interested in has the Mach modular property, we should take it seriously. And in the rest of the talk, that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to ask, what are the consequences of this? Can we understand this in terms of physics, and so on? Okay, so in particular, first I will, what I will do is just talk about some mathematical properties of these functions. Then I will tell you about what kind of context in physics do Mach modular forms appear. And finally, I will talk about some examples in string theory where there are functions you get which are very closely related to moonshine. Okay, so about the second point, when I said that I'll talk about examples in physics where they appear, I must say that there have been a few places where Mach modular forms have appeared in physics. For instance, in the work of Greg and Jan Manscott in ADS3, quantum gravity, or in black hole state counting problems. But what I mean here is I want kind of a direct, I want to compute the syllogism. Conformal field theories is to modular forms equal to what is to Mach modular forms, something like that. Okay. So that's my plan. Okay. Any questions? So you can see I was highly influenced by the colloquium. All right. Whoop. That's fine. Okay. Never mind. So let me begin. So here's the definition. Thank you very much. So Mach modular form is, so I think everybody knows this, so I'm going to be quick, is a pair of functions, h and g. Both h and g are holomorphic. H is not modular. G is modular of weight 2 minus k. And we call h a Mach modular form of weight k if the following function, h hat, which is defined as h plus g star, where I'll give you the definition of g star in a second, transforms as a weight k holomorphic modular form. And the definition of G star for today, I just will be using k equal to half. I'll assume that G of tau is a cusp form, in which case there's a very simple definition. If G has this Fourier expansion, then G star has this expansion where this is the complementary error function and tau 2, I should have said here, tau in my notation is tau 1 plus I tau 2. So tau 1 and tau 2 are the real and imaginary parts of tau. And so this is the relation to your the thing that you were talking about yesterday in this quantum mechanical index. Okay, so H transforms like a holomorphic modular form, but it's clearly not holomorphic because this is a real analytic function, and that's summarized by this equation. There's some power of tau 2 times a derivative in tau bar of H hat is equal to G bar of tau. Where G is this function, okay? And G is called the shadow because it kind of underlies the whole system. Okay, so that's the definition. If someone has not seen this and has a question. Okay. So often what happens is just like for ordinary modular forms, if you have a vector value modular forms, the way they appear many times is in terms of a Jacobi form. They're completely equivalent. And in physics, often one very often has an additional charge or potential. Exactly the same thing mathematically happens here. So you define something called a Mach Jacobi form of weight k index m if it has the following theta decomposition, exactly like for Jacobi forms, except that now HL is a Mach modular form, vector valued Mach modular forms of weight k minus half, and that means that there's a vector of shadows called GL, and so you can complete this to the following object, phi plus GL star times theta ML, and this completed object again transforms as a holomorphic Jacobi form of weight k index m as you see there, but it obeys this holomorphic anomaly, right? That a tau bar derivative has this kind of structure. So this is often called a skew Jacobi form that Miranda talked about. Okay, so these are just definitions.
What's the skewed Jacobi formula? That's the right hand side of the vertical. What's the skewed Jacobi formula? Miranda used that term too.
Yeah, so you're asking what's the definition of a skewed Jacobi formula.
Yeah.
Actually, I don't need this today, but
okay, never mind.
So I think Miranda gives the definition, but it's roughly it's to give a very quick definition, it's something like this, that GL is a vector valued monoform and theta another the usual canonical theta. That's essentially the definition. You can kind of abstract it. Okay. Good. Now it turns out that there's a very nice and powerful method to produce examples of mock Jacobi forms, starting from meromorphic Jacobi forms. And meromorphic Jacobi forms are easy; they're very simple to construct. You just look at this basis, and meromorphic means here means that it's meromorphic in the z variable. And if you want to do that, it's very simple. Take any of the Jacobi form with a zero, and divide by it. Take a quotient. Okay, you'll get a meromorphic Jacobi form. And if you begin with a meromorphic Jacobi form, so again here I'll assume k equal to 1, which is the same as k equal to half for the modular objects. And I assume that the meromorphy is simple, that there are only simple poles, no higher order poles, and all the simple poles are only at 0 and the lattice translates, okay, and with residue 1. Okay, let me just assume this. And then the theorem in this paper is the following, that it says that there's a canonical additive decomposition. Okay, so So here's the theorem. It says that if you're given a meromorphic Jacobi form, you can define, so the issue usually, well, so what's the issue? The issue is that that this theta, there is no theta function decomposition, because if there were, this side would be holomorphic, this side would be meromorphic, and therefore there's no canonical definition, there's no a priori definition of the Fourier coefficients, and so you have to give one, and that's the definition. So this is inspired by the attractor mechanism in physics. It's called the attractor contour. So you choose a contour depending on L, and given a meromorphic Jacobi form, you define these vector-valued modular forms at a certain contour. L, my notation L is always L is in Z2M, but L could be anything actually. L is any integer.
Here it's actually an integer, right?
Any L is always an integer. It's L refers to this theta decomposition, HL theta ML.
Right, but there L is modulo.
Yeah, so one thing you can show that this definition actually, this is true for any integer in the sense that this definition is if you translate by 2m, this, yeah, you get the same answer. So that was part of the theorem, that is well defined. That in fact such a thing is well defined. Okay, so you can show that. And here you call something. So then you take these HLs, package them into something called phi f. So that's your definition. And the theorem is that this meromorphic Jacobi form can be decomposed like this. It's the sum of these two objects. So this I just defined, and A1M is some completely canonical function called the Appel-Lerch sum. I've written it here because I'm going to refer to it again later. And notice it's a very simple object. It's a sum over the lattice of this very simple function. If you look at this in the z variable, it's just 1 over 2 pi z. So you just take the simple pole that the object has and translate that in both directions in the lattice. That's what this Appel-Lerch sum is. Okay. So that's your thing, and that's your theorem. Okay, so all these conditions can be relaxed. That's there in the paper. You can look it up. You can go to general weight, assume any pole, you can any order pole, and you can have poles at any torsion points with arbitrary residues. Okay, arbitrary modular residues being modular forms. Okay. And so as I said, so the main part of the, so there are two parts of the theorem. Firstly is that you can do this. And the second part is that, which is interesting, is that this object is a mock Jacobi form, okay? With shadow, which is written here. So that's the decomposition phi meromorphic is phi f plus the upper Lerch sum, and you can add to it and subtract to it the shadow function, and essentially the statement is that the shadow of this is this skew Jacobi form, where S is the first derivative. Sorry, again, I didn't realize this. It's just the, it doesn't move. It's just the first derivative of the theta function at z equals 0. Okay. So you can, indeed, you can add and subtract and complete phi f as well as upper Lerch sum. Both these objects are completely modular, but neither of them is holomorphic in tau. Both of them have shadows. Okay. Good. All right. So now you can just apply this theorem. So for instance, let's just choose the meromorphic Jacobi form. Wait, are there other questions? Good place for questions. Okay. You can choose the meromorphic Jacobi form. As I said, you can just take those basis elements, make a quotient, and you can check that this has weight 1, index 2, and residue 1 because of this B over 12. And just apply this theorem, and you get the upper Lerch sum and a mock Jacobi form, which happens to be exactly the function h2 times canonical theta functions. Okay. So in fact, if you look at this, you came a little late. Yeah. So it's h2 was the. I'm going to do a very quick. You also missed that, but that's h2.
Right.
Yeah. Yes. The answer is yes. So that's since we went back anyway, this decomposition of the elliptic genus into massless characters and massive characters is completely equivalent to the decomposition that I just showed you. It's equivalent to this decomposition for the choice psi 1 to equal to that. You just have to rearrange A's and B's and C's, and you'll get on the nose what Eguchi and Oguri and Tachikawa did. Okay. So you can go on. So this is exactly the Matthew Moonshine. Sorry, I should have gone on instead of that's your answer. You can now make examples for m greater than 2. So remember, C has a single 0, A has a double 0. So this object has a single 0, so it has a single pole as I want. So if I choose phi 0 m to be any regular Jacobi form of weight 0 and index m minus 1, I get a meromorphic Jacobi form here. And by this theorem, I get a mock Jacobi form with shadow equal to that. Okay. Now, one thing I would like to stress is that there is that the definition of mock Jacobi forms and mock modular forms, of course, has an ambiguity because you can always add a true Jacobi form, a true modular form to it. And that's seen precisely here, right? If you look at the basis elements, there's only one object which has no A's. So firstly, this should be odd, so there should be only one C in it. So whatever is here should be made of A's and B's. There's only one thing without an A. So everything else is a factor of A, and therefore does not have a pole. Okay. So the object without anything here, suppose I kill this, has the same shadow as something if I put it here. And this is the same ambiguity that we saw in Sarah's talk, essentially. So there's a huge ambiguity, which roughly goes as like some, I think, m cubed or something like that, roughly, where m is the index. Okay. But anyway, so this is if you choose a meromorphic Jacobi form, you'll get a mock Jacobi form. Okay. So here you chose a nice one, and you got this moonshine. And in this very beautiful paper by Miranda, John, and Jeff. So this is the Matthew observation. You just choose this meromorphic Jacobi form, you get the M24 mock modular form. They said, well, look, in fact, for m equal to 3, you can choose this. You can take this linear combination. And the beautiful observation was that this had M12, and so on and so on. And they said, in fact, there's a huge structure that for every m, which they talk about, there's a choice of this weight 0 index m. This should be m minus 1, excuse me. M minus one object, which gives you precisely the mock Jacobi forms associated with the finite groups that we all know and love. And here I would like to kind of make a comment again to Matthias, because so for the K3 case, I completely agree that maybe there's a point of view whether the mock is important or not. But I think without the mock structure, it would have been, I have no idea how to see the umbral moonshine coefficients at all. Right. So that's one reason I think that.
I mean, that's just saying that the mock point of view suggests that sort of generalization.
Yeah, yeah. And if you think that the umbral moonshine observation has should be taken, if you think that the Matthew, the right role of the Matthew, the right seat of the Matthew is really at the bottom of the umbral moonshine observations, then this seems to suggest that this mock modality is fairly important. Maybe it's not. Maybe there's a thing here. But this is another reason I think one should take it very seriously. And I'll stress this point again in one slide. But so one question, of course, is how to choose these objects. So at weight 2, there was no choice. There was only B. Here there was, you can see there's a two-dimensional space. I could have chosen B square or a combination with E4 times A square. Okay. And what these guys showed is that if you precisely choose this combination, you get this. If I change the coefficient, I would have gotten something else, which would be sober in my new definition.
So part of the point here is you're looking for simple poles, right?
Yeah.
So why don't you divide by C?
You can do the same thing. It's basically, if you're at odd weight, you can always take out a factor of C and everything else is A and B. It just makes life simpler. You can always.
Why aren't you dividing by
It's C? Not a free ring.
Ah.
So A, B, and C.
What's the relation?
Oh, it's the same relation that appears for the Weierstrass B function, the cubic relation that Weierstrass. Mm-hmm. It's exactly the same relation.
I see. So if I did divide by C, you say,
yeah, you
pull
can,
it
yeah,
out.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
Divide by
right. Okay. So the important question is how do you get this? Okay. So now you could take the point of view. Well, look here. These are all wave zero index m minus one objects. First, let's do the mathematics. How do you do this? Miranda explained, these input Jacobi forms are very closely related to Jacobi forms that arise in the study of black hole state counting, which we had called optimal forms. And this relation is completely not understood to why there is any relation at all. But if you do that, then so the observations are already that you get the umbral moonshine objects. And as Miranda explained beautifully in her talk, now there's a proof that imposing the optimal property plus the positivity property actually specifies this, these functions. So there's an algorithmic way. In hindsight, I could have actually derived the umbral moonshine objects without, of course, knowing why again. But there's an a priori definition. So this is something I want to stress because, I mean, I really enjoyed the talk, but I don't know how well this is appreciated. From the number theoretic viewpoint, it's a completely algorithmic way in which the umbral moonshine objects are picked out. Okay, and there are no others. Okay, so I think this is very important. This is another reason I think the mock modality is important. But now let's go to physics. You say, well, suppose you say, aha, no, I only want conformed field theories. So here, this was K3. Maybe there's a conformed field theory which gives you this, because after all, it's a weight zero index M, so it may be an elliptic genus. But that's exactly what this guy said. Cannot happen, because it looks like, or at least it doesn't happen for a simple conformed field theory, because the identity operator, appropriately spectral float, is missing from the spectrum. Okay. So this really looks like a puzzle. And
with the chiral ring, but then somehow plus and minus sign cancels, improves the.
There could be many things. And in fact, now in this conference, we're also seeing the construction of some of the modules. So John and Jeff have one module, and John and Miranda have some other module constructions. So it'll be nice to see how this thing is avoided. Okay, but I want to stress this. And actually, I want to run with this now. Okay, so that's my next thing. Okay, so because he didn't even explain this, so I don't know who did this. Any questions? So now I'm going to move to physics. Let me ask the following question. Can a mock modular form be the partition function of a physical system? Okay, so here I refer this slide to the mathematicians. So I just read out the question: is there a physical system for which this function H2 of tau is an observable, as in physics? Example as a BPS partition function. Now, until 5 days ago, I used to think that the answer is clearly not, because this is not modular. But then I'm just beginning to learn that there are structures bigger than conformed field theories which don't care about modularity, but I don't particularly like them. So that's one option. Maybe that's what happens. But if you really want to, if you think this thing comes from a conformed field theory as a torus partition function or some observable in a physical theory, the argument that there must be modularity is very simple. Most physicists will think it's trivial, but let me just say it out. It's simply that you think of the torus as the field theory is living on the torus, and the modular group is just a symmetry of the space, the two-dimensional space, and therefore any physical theory physical observable should transform under that symmetry nicely. Okay, this can be made. You can put more flesh on this using path integral arguments, using a change of variables in the path. Yeah, even conformed field theories.
Sure.
So yeah, I'm really thinking about of even conformed field theories. I'm trying to, because that's the only thing, let's say, I understand. So let's stick to that. Okay. And within that context, you can make this argument fairly tight, right? Using path integrals, which you may or may not like, but okay. Allow me to go with this. And as I said, this does not transform nicely under modular transformations. And we expect that, in fact, I don't know of any observable in two-dimensional CFT or in string theory where this does not happen.
Maybe this is where you're going, but if there's a holomorphic anomaly.
Yeah. That's exactly what I'm saying. No, but H2.
No.
So just this statement, I've never seen something like this. Okay. Exactly. So as Greg said, H2 is very closely related to H2 hat, which is modular. So let me ask now the question, can H2 hat be a physical observable? From this point of view, certainly yes, because it does transform well. But now let me refine the question. Can this completed Mach modular form or Mach Jacobi form, let's say Mach Jacobi form, because that gives us the elliptic genus, be a supersymmetric partition function of a physical system, namely something like the elliptic genus? Okay. So the correct definition of the elliptic genus, as Greg wrote down, is not minus 1 to the f, q to the l naught, zeta g naught, but there's a q bar to the l naught bar to define it correctly. But of course, then you notice that only right moving ground states contribute, because there's no insertion on the right. So minus 1 to the f bar kills all massive representations. Anything with L0 bar greater than 0 will be killed. Okay. But as I think most of us know, there's an assumption in this statement, namely that the spectrum is discrete. Okay. And if that's not true, then all bets are off. Okay. So in particular, for a conformed field theory with a continuous spectrum, the spectrum looks like this, right? You have some discrete parts. So Christoph wrote something like this in his talks. There's a continuous part labeled by n and n bar, the left and right movers, and then there's a discrete spectrum. And here I'm thinking of one non-compact direction. And if that's the case, there's no winding around this direction, and therefore these have to be tied, and there's only one momentum. But notice now that there's a density of states in the definition. And this also relates to the conversations we were having in the last talk. There's density of states in the definition. And in general, rho bosonic is not equal to rho fermionic. And this you can make very precise. Okay? What this means is that essentially supersymmetry does not commute with your normalizability criteria. You can have a state which is bosonic, which is L2 normalizable, but you act on it by Q and it's out of the spectrum, or the other way around. Okay? That can happen. And in fact, that does happen. Okay? So the answer to this question, can a completed Mach Jacobi form be a supersymmetric partition function of a physical system, is yes. The answer is yes, it can. And yes, it is. And this was shown by in this very nice paper by Antrost, and then Eguchi and Sugawara and Ashok and Trost, in a series of papers. And the theory they talked about is this n=2,2 superconformed field theory, the so-called SIGAR theory, which Sarah described a little bit. It's called a SIGAR because the target space for large M really has the shape of a SIGAR. It's an infinite, semi-infinite object. So that's where the continuum comes from. And the way they solved it is, so I'm just going to sketch this because I don't know if this is really of interest to the audience, but essentially what they did was, this, so the definition of this theory is algebraic. You have some current algebra, which defines SL2, and then you take the usual coset construction. So that's what they did, but then they took a certain free field, well, I must say almost free field representation, which is fairly well known, goes back to the work of Davitsky, and then just did the usual implementation of the coset by introducing a U1 gauge field and integrating over the Wilson lines of the gauge field, which I shall call A and B, or as a complex parameter U. They did this, and the answer is, so it's not an easy computation, and they did this, and so it kind of took these three papers to completely figure it out, and then it's all there. And the answer is this. I've made a little bit of a shortcut. Instead of the cigar, I've shown the answer for a cigar mod ZM. And you can imagine that for the cigar, what happens is that it's you have to implement the quantum symmetry on this and sum over it. Okay, but the point is that it's exactly equal. So this should be theta one over eta cubed times this Appel-Lurk sum a 1/m completed. Okay, it's on the nose equal to that. Okay, so that's the you can see how Mach objects begin to appear in conformed field theories. The reason it appears was discussed. There's a essentially there is a continuum spectrum and a discrete spectrum. If you look, so the discrete spectrum are the ones which are kind of localized at the inside the throat of the cigar. If you act on them by modular transformations, they're not closed. You get necessarily the continuum spectrum, so you cannot just separate them, and therefore there is a necessary mixing. And the way it happens is precisely in this Mach nature. Okay.
Do you believe that this is in general true for any non-compact?
So Jeff and I and Sungjae Lee, for instance, studied a bunch of examples. So I used to think so, and now I don't. So there's a bigger structure clearly. So there are many examples now by many people. And so if you do path integrals correctly, you'll always have modularity. The question is there a simple holomorphic anomaly like this? And the answer is no, it's not always like that. Sometimes it's because the elliptic genus is not even defined. In this case, it's completely well defined because this Z is couples to the R charge. Okay. Sometimes if you do that, it's still not defined. You need another regulator. So you need to put another kind of U1 object to regulate it. There was also a discussion there. But when you do that, that object does not couple to a current. It's only a charge. And therefore, you don't have holomorphy. So this is a much bigger structure, which I don't understand the mathematics of yet very well. But we have explicit examples where we computed it. There's non-holomorphy, but it's not just this one. Yes.
The examples you studied, are there character value index theorems for the target spaces?
Well, so the ones
they're non-compact, so
which the ones we studied are essentially the simplest ones are ALE spaces.
So then the answer is yes.
Yeah.
The full set of examples that we've studied. You don't have index theorems in general.
No. So the thing is, we also studied like just two-dimensional field theories, which I don't know necessarily what the geometric interpretation is. But yeah, in the ALE cases, that's. Jeff, do you have something to say?
No, I mean for ALE and ALF, you do have.
Yeah, ALE and ALF, sorry, I should have said.
You do have
vector. You have fairly nice.
So it's the idea that the umbral functions also fit into a framework of this kind?
I'll come to this. That's the next thing, which is.
Do you know of any example without supersymmetry?
Example of what?
Non-compact theory without supersymmetry.
I could have asked the same thing for a modular form, and I don't know the answer to that either, because I don't know how to get holomorphy out of a general CFT. It's the elliptic genus, right?
Right.
If I have a modular form, I want something holomorphic in tau. The way I do that usually is by looking at BPS. Okay. Good. Other questions? Good. There's one small detour I want to make because there are a bunch of physicists, so this might interest them. There's actually, so this calculation is not very easy. but you can, they did it, it's pioneering as well. But actually you can understand this result very simply from by using a gauge linear sigma model description. And this actually immediately gives you a huge generalization, because you can basically put whatever theory you want. And that also gives you some relations to geometry, because that's exactly how you think of the geometries as coming from the gauge linear. And that's indeed what indeed what got me first, thinking about this. There's a similar workshop in California, and Jeff and I and Sheldon Katz were talking about this, and I said eventually we're saying that perhaps a gauge linear sigma model is some kind of intermediate between geometric description and a conformal field theory. So you can certainly study these things, and there's a very simple gauge linear sigma model written down by Hori and Kapustin, and this was studied in these two papers. This is Sujay Ashok, Jan Trost, and Nima Dorud, who's there. So you can just get the same answer. And there's a very simple way of understanding the holomorphic anomaly. So just like in the topological string theory, what was the holomorphic anomaly in the topological string theory? It says tau 2 to some power, tau bar derivative of that is equal to 1, the constant. That 1 was interpreted as 1 degree of freedom at the boundary, the simplest holomorphic anomaly, at the boundary of moduli space. Here, the right-hand side of the holomorphic anomaly, I don't have it here, is a full modular function. This modular function is essentially the theta function of a boson. So you can see that there is one boson whose momentum and winding states, so it's not chiral, do not decouple from the field cohomology. That precisely explains
the K3-conformal field theory in generic points, of course, does have a discrete spectrum, right?
Mm-hmm.
So how does this whole discussion, in your opinion, relate to something?
Yeah, so this is related to Matthias's question. I'll come to this very soon. It's the next topic. Okay, but let me just make this. The last comment is this, that in fact, the holomorphic anomalies in these models is related to the U1 chiral anomaly, that's dear to my heart, because sometimes mathematicians complain and say, oh, you shouldn't call it a holomorphic anomaly. I think it's really an anomaly in the true sense of physics. Okay, let me move on. And here is the answer to both your questions. So this is now a bunch of models based on this conformal field theory that Jeff and I studied along with Janer Nasaroglu, and it's the following. So here I write down the world sheet superconformal field theory, two-dimensional, which describes type 2 string theory on this background. So here is a two-dimensional object, time times a circle, times a K3, so that's 6 dimensions. Essentially, what this theory is doing is describing fibrains, the near horizon geometry of fibrains. You put the fibrains on this 6-dimensional object, there is a radial 4-dimensional space left. If you put all the fibrains at one point, then essentially you have a radial direction, a linear dilaton times a 3-sphere. Now if you deform the fibrains, put them on the Coulomb branch, there's a parameter, and what you get is that SO4 symmetry is broken to U1 symmetry, and that U1 symmetry is the U1 of the SIGAR model, so you have a SIGAR, times the supersymmetric minimal model, SU2 mod U1, okay, mod ZM. So this was studied initially by Ogur and Wafa, and then Givon and Kutasov, and many people have studied this. By T-duality in string theory, this is related to singularities. This is so there's this whole bunch of things you can say. But now what do you study? What you do is, firstly this, clearly this minimal model has an ADE classification in conformal field theory. This is Capelli, Hitchcock, and Zuber, which is exactly the ADE classification of fibrains in string theory, okay? Now, what you do is you wrap a fundamental string, a large microscopic fundamental string on this circle and let it evolve in time. Then study the conformal field theory of this microscopic string. So there's a tau parameter which you do not integrate over. It's really a physical string. And what you study, what we want to study is some observable in this conformal field theory, which is really a string theory. Okay, so is that clear? Good. And what we compute is what is called the second helicity supertrace, which is essentially the following. So when you write this conformal field theory, you'll find that there's a space-time supersymmetry algebra. So the space-time is effectively two-dimensional, but of course, the compact space is not really compact. But think of it as a two-dimensional. There's a two-dimensional space-time supersymmetry, which appears on the string world sheet. Right? This is coming from the spin fields of this world sheet theory. And there's a corresponding space-time U1 R charge. So what you do is you take minus 1 to the F space-time, Q to the L0, Q bar to the L0 bar with these constants, times two insertions of this U1 current. So it's set with type 2 is 32, 5 brain breaks half, K3 breaks half. So, well, K3 breaks half and the 5 brain breaks another half. So it's 8. Okay. And the 8.
And the world sheet theory has 8 supersymmetries.
The world sheet theory has a 4,4 object, and the space time also has a 4,4 because space time is also chiral. Except it's not quite chiral. Yeah, but what I'm saying is that there's an effective. To study the space time theory, you need to sum over the spin structures. And there's some effective space time supercharge, which is different from the world sheet supercharge.
If you imagine making the torus small, can you actually recast this as a computation in any Wolfsburgian number?
Good question. So one thing I must say is that So if I take a 5 brain and look at its near horizon background, that's dual to some theory which lives on the 5 brain, which we don't know very well about. What we're doing here is studying the string states, the perturbative string states in the dual gravitational background. So that's dual to some sector of the little string theory. So, and therefore some sector of the Young-Mills theory. So maybe there's a way to extract it, but I don't know of one. So if you want to study the full Young-Mills theory, you'll have D brains, you have everything. Right? So, okay, but that's something. And this observable, if the theory had been holomorphic, this would have been simply, like, suppose you take heterotic string theory, do exactly the same computation, then this would be just, this would be completely modular, and these numbers would be counting the number of BPS states with n equal to the electric charge square, charge invariant. Okay, so that's the analog, and this is what you compute. To compute this, you have to essentially do a torus computation in string theory. So this involves sum over the spin structures. If I had some Green-Schwarz string, then I could have interpreted this as some elliptic genus in space-time, but I don't have one. But I can certainly do the computation because I have an explicit superconformal field theory. In order to do this, because it involves these things, I actually need an explicit superconformal field theory description of K3 because I need to know its NS sector, Riemann sector, everything. And we have one. We just take some T2 mod Z, T4 mod Z2 point. And turns out when you do all that, the final answer only depends on the elliptic genus of K3. Okay, so a lot of information goes in. This is maybe to be expected, but I don't have, this is what happens. Nowhere in the computation did we do any n equal to 4 decomposition, no dropping of states, nothing. You just do a perfectly well-defined observable in the string theory.
I'm getting confused by two conformal field theories.
Yeah.
There's one of the space-time strings, one, because this is a target space, is a string background.
Yeah.
So you're summing over the spin structures of the...
Of the world sheet.
Of the world sheet.
Yeah, of this, yeah, that's something. And then I interpret it as some two-dimensional thing, but let's not... Other question?
You wrote a paper with, I forget, the other authors, but where you looked at, in detail, the relationship between the genus counting with BPS states and the space-time velocity of the BPS states. I think for theory it was 16.
Can I go on? right? You do this and you get this integral. So again, this is this. This is the sum over the Wilson lines of this coset. And you get something, it's actually a very nice function. Maybe I should have written it a better way because they're mathematicians. Actually, this function is very nice. It's essentially just a, so this in terms of Jacobi forms, this is just phi 0, 1. But the whole function essentially is just the Weierstrass P function times a nice non-holomorphic object. But there's some nice formula, pretty formulas there. And this, so this is what we got. And then we, well, it's not necessarily causal, but we discovered that, in fact, Davide Gaiotto and Donzaghi had actually solved precisely this integral. This is some work yet to be published. I don't know when this was done, 5 years ago. Okay. And they have the answer, and we actually got the answer in another. So here I show you the result for the case m equal to 2. Which is actually much simpler because there is nothing here. It's just yes. Okay, so you do that, you get this, and that's the answer. So that's the answer to your question, that the answer is minus eta cube times the completed function h2 hat. Okay, it's precisely this, where h2 hat is this moonshine object. Okay, so h2 hat, let me remind you, is this. So this is holomorphic part which counts M24 representations, and there's this completion part, which involves this error function. So what's the moral of the story? K3 has lots of fluctuations, lots of BPS fluctuations. But now suppose you put a fibrin on K3, you generate a throat. What in the space-time physics, what is happening? You have wave functions in the throat, which you have to tensor with the K3 excitations. So for every K3 excitation, there's only one, or there's a bunch of physical space-time string configurations. So then you can actually go and ask, what is the wave function of these guys? It turns out that if you are a massive representation of K3, so you have this cigar, a massive representation of K3 is localized. The wave function is localized at the tip of the cigar. If you are a massless representation, the one which people drew, turns out that's called the graviton representation. In fact, and I think in your original papers, I actually called it the graviton representation, precisely because it's the graviton. And we know that graviton goes out to infinity in terms of traveling waves. So what the fibrin is doing is naturally splitting the K3 representations into two parts, one of which is localized, that's the discrete spectrum. And the other one, it doesn't drop anything. All it does is it just puts it into the continuum spectrum and precisely gives you this continuum. Yes?
If you tealize this,
yes.
You think there might be a GLSM? Singularity.
Yeah, so this is the kind of thing that Sarah was talking about.
So if you literally do the computation in that gauge linear signal model with the singular, the Coulomb branch sticking out that gives you the continuum, do you reproduce the same?
Yeah, so it's not exactly that, right? Because there are other things. So firstly, there's this. So the T duality at the singular point, we think it maps the fibrin to that. And then there's some resolution in the singular point. So you have to ask what happens in the geometry. So you do have a gauge linear sigma model for the cigar, which is the one I studied. You can either study that or a T-dual, which has some Liouville potential.
If you resolve the singularity, there's no longer a continuum in the K3 picture.
Yeah, so it's not. So the thing that's not clear to me is what is the T-dual of the cigar theory on the Coulomb branch of the fibrins. That's not clear to me.
I mean, there are really two K3s, if you want. I mean, there's one K. Well,
yeah,
I think
precisely.
So the fibrin theory by itself is a T dual to an A1.
Absolutely.
Right.
We, in addition, have a K3 factor. So if you did that duality, then you would actually be looking at something that was
K3 times
K3. An
A1. Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Which is.
Exactly. Some eight dimensions. That's the interesting object. Absolutely. Right.
And if you believe that M24 has something to do with K3, shouldn't then all of these functions turn on M24 actually?
So
there's not a K3 in your background, isn't there?
There is. Yeah, yeah.
So shouldn't that be inherited by this coefficient theorem?
That's the idea, right?
But I mean, the umbral functions are not invariant under the subject.
Let me just do one more slide, and then I'll take your question because it has to do exactly with this. Okay?
Can I ask
yes.
a stupid question? Is this H2, can you remind me, the wave function with Jeff's favorite minus 2, or is it only has minus 1?
Oh, you asked to normalize? I don't remember.
No, it's without the minus 2.
So it's minus 1, right?
Oh, no.
She asked about the overall normalization.
The little H2? I think since it's little h, it probably has minus 1 or minus 2.
I don't remember.
So isn't
Let me say, I'll give you an equation soon which will answer your question, actually.
Okay.
Okay, I'm sure it will answer your question.
Is the interpretation of K2 hat literal as a partition function so the discrete spectrum is positive integer coefficient?
It's not a partition function, it's this thing that I told you. It's this.
Oh, I see. Okay, so there's minus signs.
Yeah. Okay, other questions? Okay, so now you can ask, well, this is for m equal to 2. And now five brains have a natural ADE classification. So one guess, and so do the Niemeyer lattices. One guess would be to go and explore the five brains at higher m with ADE, the appropriate ADE five brains. Yeah. So what happens? So do that. So this is what we did in our second paper. So in the first paper, we kind of spelled out this is the thing to do. And then we took about 1 year to do that. And we find a formula for the similar to this. It's more complicated. And then Don Zaghi and I spent some time solving similar integrals. And there's actually a nice, so I think I'm out of time, so I won't show you the number theory, but there's a pretty formula which involves a class of integrals, a family of integrals like this, whose answers can be interpreted in terms of what is called a Mach Eisenstein series. So if somebody's interested, I can show you during the break. It's quite pretty. I can solve the, it has independent interest. So what do we get? So one thing you're guaranteed to get is a Mach modulo. So firstly, you're guaranteed to get something modular because by construction, if you think about this, you're also guaranteed to get something with a Mach kind of behavior. And what you would get is not purely a Mach function, but something which is a product of a Mach and something like this. This is what usually called mixed Mach modular forms. It just means exactly this. Take a Mach modular form, multiply it by a regular modular form, okay? And that. What it that's how much modularity guarantees, okay? So what we get is a bunch of objects which, maybe let me write down one formula and then, sorry about that. I'll just very quickly write down one formula because it's useful. It's that the answer we get, suppose you take some lattice Y, which is A or D or E, what you get is pi Y of tau is you get minus rank of Y, E2, plus 24 times a function called F2 of Y, which, well, let me just very quickly write down what the function is, just to be complete, and then it's something like an Eisenstein series. Okay, so it's something like an Eisenstein series, but that's the explicit expression. It's Mach because here you have these inequalities, there are minus and things like this. Okay, and these you can prove that any multiple of this has the right modular property a priori using some method called holomorphic projections. So you're guaranteed to be something like this plus a modular form of weight 2. There is no modular form of weight 2, so you're guaranteed to get something like this. But now there's a surprise. And the surprise is in a small surprise, which is the one, I think, important thing in our computation, which is that when the rank divides 24, we find that there's a factorization. So here I've shown the holomorphic part, and then there's a non-holomorphic completion. The factorization, this is the rank times this object is this function that I just wrote. Okay, and it's only when that is true. You can prove this using this formula. You can, it's almost obvious. Because f begins with 1, there's a 24 here. So so when rank of y divides 24, this is precisely, so it had to be a linear combination of this sort purely by modularity. A, it's pretty that it really comes out of a computation, and B, there's something very interesting about this factorization. Okay, so you can now ask, this is my last thing. So how does the, do all the numbers of the Mach-Jacobi form organize themselves in this kind of computation? This object you can think of as, this is the second helicity supertrace. You can think of this as a Taylor coefficient of the Mach-Jacobi form, the first non-trivial Taylor coefficient, which has weight 2. And then you can, instead of a theta expansion, you can do Taylor expansions. And if you have enough of them, that's going to reconstruct the Mach Jacobi form. At higher weights, of course, modularity doesn't guarantee that you get exactly these functions, the ones related to moonshine, because I can add an E4 to it. There's an equivalent formula, which is essentially the Rankine-Cohn brackets of these two objects, but then you can add. And so I don't know the answer to that yet. But that's one question which is interesting. Can the full umbral Mach-Jacobi form be reconstructed from the knowledge of these things, or do you get something else? You'll get something if you do the computation correctly, and I don't know what you get. Okay, so that's the end. Let me conclude with this. So there are, okay, so firstly, let me begin here. I think for me, this is nice that I think there's a natural home in conformed field theory, string theory for Mach-Mohler forms. Five brains naturally complete the holomorphic partition function into a modular one. That's very nice as well. So you don't have to do any dropping. There's this mathematical connection, which if there's anything here, that would be spectacular, but that's very far-fetched. And there's this, which I think is worth pursuing, namely, there are things to do, namely ask, can we get understand like all the twisted traces? If the twisting is inside K3, it's obvious we get the right answer. This we already showed. But what about the other ones? And these observations, do they have to do with Mach modularity? These observations in string theory, do they have to do with Mach modularity or Mohn-Chern? That's my end. Thank you.